This is Ming Chen from AMC's Comic Book Man. I love Houston. I love podcasting. But what I really love is the Rebel Radio podcast.
This is Booker T, Hall of Famer, and you're listening to Rebel Radio. Now, can you dig that, sucker?
Episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast, the 250th episode. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
This is Log, the archaeologist.
Yes.
Well, I mean,
treasure hunter.
Technically, at the movie, you could be one of the bad guys at the beginning. That was a bad stereotype there. What the fuck are you, Log?
I don't get it. Why'd you say it out loud?
Because you were fucking with me pre-show, so you know.
He's saying that you could be one of those Asian gangsters, but
that's
I
right.
Don't want him to be. Because
it's club, oh,
you didn't know
club Obi-Wan.
He'll poison you, man.
No,
he'll slip poison in your Dr. Pepper. You'll never.
Well, long,
he'll just start.
Well, Long's a lethal motherfucker, dude. So you know he could probably do that anyway.
Yep.
You know? Poison.
I mean, let's just be honest. Matt,
Dr. Jones.
Out of all three of us, who's the most obvious to be like this dark secret agent that we don't know about? It's fucking Long, man.
Long.
There's no doubt about that. You know? It's like, am I right?
I think you're right, man.
I mean, he always has these mysterious nicknames when he logs into the Zencaster, and I'm telling you, man, he's the most likely suspect.
I don't know. I've still kept the same name for the past 6 months now.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying, you know, most likely. You know, Matt can't keep a straight face, so we know it's not him. He laughs about everything, okay? And, like, I'm just not that graceful to be, like, a secret agent or anything. So it would have to be you, Long.
Yep, it's all on you, man.
Hey, Matt, take it as a compliment, man, that you're a badass, okay?
Got it.
All right, then. That's all. Yeah. Well, welcome, then. This is 250 episodes and kind of celebrating seven. The show turned seven in early May. That's quite – you know, when I started this thing, I really didn't know how far it would go. I didn't really know what I was doing as a podcaster. And my my mentor, Carrie, you know, Gordon, in front of the show from Metal Geeks, he kind of encouraged me to keep it going, and he gave me some tips early on. And a little bit of credit to Justin Corbett, too, as well. Both those guys kind of encouraged me to get this thing going. And there were several times, I mean, maybe 10, 12 episodes in, thought about quitting. We weren't sure what we were doing, and then we kept it going longer. And here we are, man, 7 years later and 250 episodes. And about 150 of those episodes have been within the last 2 years as we've just been blazing through episodes. I mean, we do it weekly now. We've got a good rhythm going. We've had a couple weeks here where we've just, you know, the freeze back in February or you know, someone's on vacation. We've taken a week off here and there. But for the most part, we've gone almost 3 years straight doing a show. And that's pretty remarkable in its own right. Not too many shows can say that. And, you know, we might not be the most popular show out there in the world or famous or anything like that, but that's not why we do it. We do it because we kind of like hanging out together and talking movies and pop culture. And I do know it's easy for us to do the Zencaster thing, but I'm hoping there's a time that we can get together and do a show together again in person. And possibly in June, we might be doing another live show for the first time in a while back at Misfit Toys. Maybe I'll let the cat out of the bag a little bit on that, but it's on the table, so more than likely it's going to happen in June or early July. So that's something to look forward to, and be in the same room with you fellas and doing a show. It's been a long time since we've done that. So actually coming up on about a year. It seems like we've been doing the digital thing since COVID first hit March, but we actually kept doing live shows until about May when we realized, like, okay, maybe we should be a little safer about this, you know? Mm-hmm. So we did do live. It was around May 7th or 10th or so last year. We did our first digital show. So just over a year, but it's still been a long time. But still a lot to celebrate today. And I've said it before on the show, we've done milestone episodes and 250 is a milestone. It's halfway to 500. And thank you to you two guys, and y'all's commitment to the show. Even if Long gives me some grief sometimes about doing a little homework, I know he needs it in good spirits, and I know he enjoys doing it too and putting forth the effort.
I finished my list too
to do the show. And before we get into download this and stuff, I want to say what the number 250 means as far as 250. And 250 is an energy number that has to do with relationships and the glue that holds them together. And that's a very short version, but I think that does show our commitment to the show. That 250 provides the energy and that milestone, because it shows your commitment to something and the energy we put into it. And watching
Hail Satan.
Well, if you choose.
Yeah.
And
250, verse of Lucifer, book of Satan. Right?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Whatever floats your boat or sinks.
Yeah, man. I mean, see? I tell you, Matt.
Moderate dark sacrifice.
Tell you, Matt. Dark fucking secrets, man.
Yeah, dark
What's
magic.
With this guy?
Matt's last born child shall be given to the great fallen.
You know, he cut that ponytail off and he cut that ponytail off and he probably did something with it. Some sort of voodoo shit, man, you know?
He transferred his soul into a doll and he's going to come back something. As a best friend doll.
But yes.
Okay, it wasn't from the Book of Satan.
But
so what's the 250 got it from? Is it just a general saying or some sort?
That was that's what it means, like in astrology, the energy resonating energy of relationships and commitment and so it's good.
Nice.
It's good. But there are some weeks where work is tough and. Like this week, I'm not going to lie, I was a little foul mood today and some other stuff going on. And, do I want a podcast? And every now and then we all kind of agree we're tired and we'll do it on Saturday night instead of Friday. But I somehow always find the energy to do it because I do really enjoy doing it with you guys. And there comes a few, you get that streak where it might be a few weeks in a row where it feels like it's a bit of a chore. But then you come along, you get renewed energy in doing it, and then you're excited to record with you guys on Friday or Saturday night.
Yeah.
And otherwise, I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't enjoy it because, we don't get paid for this. We do it for fun. as Matt's dad wondered why we did it that one time when he was like, why do y'all do this? Well, because we want to. And I had to call that out a bit because Long reminded me of that moment
when he was railing at me before Matt got home.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that's why we do it, because we like it. We're not doing this. We're not doing this to get rich.
It was for my show when it was running.
Yeah. I mean, we're not doing this to get rich. We're not trying to be Kevin Smith, even though, he's a mentor as well, as far as leading a lot of podcasts across the world. We just do it because we want to, And if something ever came along and we were able to get any kind of money off of it, great. But I'm not holding my breath anytime soon. For sure. So I guess we can officially get into today's show then. Some fun stuff today. Download this, man, where we tell people we watch, stream, checked out for the week. And I just have had such a busy week. I texted you guys early. I don't remember really sitting in front of the TV and watching much of anything, but that's not entirely true because Long was ragging on me about Buckaroo Banzai pre-show, and I did put it on one night and watched about parts of it, but I fell asleep on the couch and it was still running when I woke up, so that's about all I really watched this week other than the movie.
You fell asleep during Buckaroo Banzai?
Dang. I mean, well, it's just because I'm tired, and that happens when you get old, okay? So, but that's about it, man. I was hoping to watch more this week. But, school's almost out, and I'll have more time soon to get to watching stuff. It's like now, man, I get home from picking up the boys. It's like 4:30. You barely sit down. It's time to make dinner, give them baths, get them in bed. So I'll have, about 2.5 extra hours once school's out. So that should help some. But you guys check out anything interesting this week?
Yes.
Yep. I'll go. I finally finished Resident Evil Village. It's a really cool storyline. Ethan has grown on me for sure. And I know Resident Evil 9 is coming. And long we were like, you got to play 7. 7's what it was based off of. And that's what I, you know, came to find out whenever I finished the game, because there's a reference back to 7 and a revelation about Ethan that happens. And you kind of, I was like, man, now I got to play 7. I've got to know how this all started. Yeah. And so I'm about, it's a 6-hour game on average. So if that is the measurement, then I'm a little over a third of the way through of 7 now. I started playing that, and man, it plays like a horror movie. You are in the dark a lot. So there's a lot of times where you have no weapon. You just have no weapon because you're searching the house with a flashlight, and your possessed girlfriend is crawling on the floor trying to kill you, and she chops off your arm with a fucking chainsaw, and somehow you get stitched back together, and you're in front of this infected family that's eating human body parts and cutting off each other's limbs for fun. And it's crazy, man. The dad won't die. He's basically the nemesis or Mr. X. In this film.
So, but in short, how would you definitely different experience from Village, huh?
Different experience. Like, I think you explained it. You portrayed it the best when you said number one is, or number 7's more of a horror film, kind of, and 8 is more of an action film. And I will say it's like fantasy action 8. You know, there's, you know, just how they have the storyline. I do encourage you, if you're a Resident Evil fan, and you know, you're like, after 4 or even 5, you're like, you know what, you know, that's about that's all the Resident Evil I want. I just like the original characters. Chris Redfield comes back. He's in both, so they tie it in.
Thanks for the spoilers.
Well, he's on the cover of 8, but he does show up in 7. That's a little spoiler on 7, but 7 came out in 2017.
So did your kids watch you play 7?
They watched me play a little bit, yeah. I told
Jake.
Did they
get freaked out?
I was like, come here, Jake. And he's like, oh my god.
Oh, they didn't get scared?
He freaked out, but he didn't get scared. It was kind of like a wow, you know. He was surprised, but he didn't get freaked out. I can't let them watch it too much because Jackie will get on me. But man, they're definitely awesome games. I can't wait to finish 7. And I can't wait until they release what's going to happen with 9. Other than that, I did watch, I tried to watch Last Crusade. I ended up watching most of it. And I had forgotten that you have the Boy Scouts at the beginning. And I was like, oh yeah, there's Scouts, because I saw it once. And I never saw it again until recently. And then after that, I watched...
Such a sheltered life.
Yeah, I know, right? after that, what did I watch, man? I watched Bad Batch. I finally watched The Bad Batch, the first episode. And I will say I like it. I like it. You've got Tarkin in there, General Tarkin. And there's some cool stuff in there. You know, starting with the Execute Order 66, going through the mics of the clone troopers, and there's some talk with the Kaminoans, the cloners. So, you know, if you haven't gotten started on the Bad Batch, definitely watch the Bad Batch. Other than that, I didn't see many more movies, more games, and stuff for me.
Yeah. Think of zombies, though. I do want to see Snyder's Army of the Dead. I just haven't had a chance. I heard it's 2.5 hours. I'm not sure how a zombie movie is 2.5 hours, but
wow.
Yeah, it seems awfully long, but I'm going to try to watch it at some point.
I've been seeing a lot of memes of the Army of the Dead.
It seems like it's kind of middle of the road. Some people really like it, and some people, typical. I guess that's typical of Zack Snyder. People either like it or they don't.
Yeah. Apparently,
yeah.
There's a meme floating around of a girl.
What did you watch?
Let's see. Well, first off, I spent the extra couple of days to finally have my fish tank to where it is. And I'm really happy at how it turned out with the decor. So I've heard Matt sing praises about it, but I want to kind of hear, hey, Mark, what did you think? I know you gave a text message reaction.
I gave a thumbs up.
With the Millennium Falcon.
Looks like a cool fish tank.
With floating rocks.
With rocks and the Millennium Falcon. I mean, like, I don't know how excited I'm supposed to be. I don't want to let you down. But it looks cool. I mean, you know, it takes a lot of patience to do. I don't have the patience. So, you know, I applaud you on that. You know, I mean, I mean, the Millennium Falcon gives you a bonus there, you know. So I didn't say boner. I said bonus, you know.
I thought you were going to say boner.
It looks cool.
Thank you.
Now you got to get some fish in it.
Have one.
Are you trying to do live plants right now? Are you doing live plants in this one again, all that shit?
Maybe some floating plants, but nothing more than that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Not going to do the whole plant them, but
yeah,
just to filter out the poop.
You'd have to sell more toys to fit this one in there, did you? I mean, because that breaks my heart right there. I mean, I couldn't do it for fish. You know, I'm keeping my fucking toys.
I did, but there were just stuff there were stuff that I collected that I knew would give me value.
I mean, if it ever came down to the kids or toys, I mean, you know, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Hey, there's a transformer behind me still up there. I don't know if y'all could see it, but
the transformer up top on the top bookshelf.
Yeah, the top corner next to the light. Yeah, I don't think I'll ever give up that one. No, in my Transformers collections, there are Transformers that I am emotionally attached to, but there are some that I bought, admittedly, that I know will go up in value.
Right.
So
that makes
there's
sense.
Some that so that's kind of half and half. And I sold like hundreds of dollars of Transformers I knew would gain in value. So that's the Asian in me, though. So anyways, so my download this. I watched a documentary film on HBO Max about Fred Rogers, Will You Be My Neighbor? It was a pretty interesting documentary. I liked it a lot. Wholesome, not cynical at all.
I've heard about it.
Yeah, it's pretty good. They kind of go behind the scenes on what it's like to work with the guy and, you know, what his goal in television was and, you know, some of the anecdotes that happened behind the scenes that are interesting.
Yeah.
He was never
in the movie with Tom Hanks?
No, I didn't. No. I heard it was not really about Fred Rogers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Didn't really focus much on
it. It is and it isn't. It's different. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I watched the DCU animated film, Death of Superman. And it was pretty good. I didn't like who they picked to play Lex Luthor's voice. It sounds a little too.
You don't like Dwight Schrute?
Huh?
Dwight Schrute?
Is that who Rainn Wilson played him?
Yes, Rainn Wilson is Lex Luthor.
Really?
Yep.
He didn't sound like Rainn Wilson.
It's Rainn Wilson, Bubba.
Yeah.
Yep.
His voice is way too high pitched.
And you got Shamar Moore as a Cyborg.
Let me see. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's really well done.
Yeah, and it was pretty good. And the action, man, they really hammer in how hard it was to try to defeat and kill Doomsday.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's action-packed, but it feels like it's action that has an emotional content to it. It's really well done. It's one of the better DC animated films, for sure.
Yeah. Jason O'Mara played Batman. Yeah. I'm surprised. Rosario Dawson was
Wonder Woman.
Yeah. She did Wonder Woman quite a few of the films.
Rebecca Remains Stamos.
So this is part of the New 52 continuity in the films?
They had that loose continuity for several films there,
Starting from
Justice League War.
Yeah.
It was a loose continuity.
Should I watch Reign of the Superman?
I'll watch Reign of Superman.
Apocalypse. It's good. It's not as solid, but still well done. Yeah, well done. It's worth watching. And then Apocalypse War is really good too. That was really excellent. Really well done.
Yeah.
But
there was a good stretch there. Right?
Yeah, there was a good stretch there where they did Death Superman, Rain Superman, then Batman Hush, and then that. And I know Batman Hush took some flack from people that were so adored by the comics that they didn't like the changes, but as a fan of the comics, I was okay with the changes in the movie. I mean, you know, there was some stuff in the comics that you could leave out to do the changes in the movie. It didn't bother me that much, you know. So I was okay with it, you know. And the changes were so slight that it, you know, it didn't matter. Well, but yeah, they're worth watching for sure.
Like Jonathan Kent being alive, you know. But isn't he dead?
Yeah, he's alive in the comics too.
No, isn't he dead? And he sees him in heaven whenever he's in a coma? Which one am I thinking of?
Comics. Not in the recent comics, no.
Like the old one. Like the one that was sealed in the
I was never that old.
The one in the white covered.
Oh no, that was different. I'm thinking about Batman Hush.
Oh, okay.
Where they made some changes in that. But,
I'm talking about, Death of Superman.
You're not, gosh, were you even paying attention?
but for some reason, it popped in my head, you know?
But that stretch of films there from the Death of Superman on to the end of the New 52 continuity are all, I think, worth watching. They're pretty well done. Anything else, Long? That was it?
No, that's it. That's my download this.
Yeah. Speaking of toys, I did make a purchase. Like last week, I bought that Black Series Boba Fett. So I was cruising eBay and at Vintage Star Wars, and you know, like a person, you know, they can tell if you viewed it, right? The eBay sellers, and they can send you offers. And I already have a Vintage Boba Fett, but a guy sent me an offer on what I looked at. He was asking like $45 for it originally, and I'm like, I was just looking around because my Vintage one is a little loose, so I wanted one in a little better shape. And the guy sends me an offer of like $33, almost $12 off. I'm like, oh, fuck. I couldn't say no to it. It was only like $3 shipping. So I did get another Vintage Boba Fett to add to my collection.
Nice.
Because, I mean, Boba Fett, I mean, when the show comes out next year, you know, Vintage Boba Fett's just only going to go higher. I mean, he's already a popular character. His figures already run for a bit of money, you know, the Vintage stuff. So it's probably only going to get higher. So I was like, I want to grab another one in better shape. And it came in the mail yesterday. It is in better shape than my other one. And I was like, so I felt it was worth the upgrade on that character since he's so popular. His popularity will only continue to rise. And
you know, that reminds me, I did put down a pre-order for a new Transformer figure. And this is for my own personal pleasure. And it is the Slag, the Triceratops Transformers to go with the Grimlock I purchased recently. Yeah, the movie version.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that's cool. So I got the Triceratops. And I hope they do the entire Dinobots. Because I've been willing to spend money on the Dinobots individually to collect them all.
Yeah.
Because I'm that's a sucker for Dinobots Transformers.
I wonder how the pre-orders work sometime. Like, I have the pre-order. Oh, yeah. I have the pre-order for the that Heir to the Empire Luke Black Series, right, through Entertainment Earth. But then, I go on eBay and other places, and people say they have them in hand. Do they really have them in hand, or are they lying to people? Try to get them to spend money, you know? I make sure
you have to. Yeah, you have to look at where they are originating from, because it could be folks who work from the factories that have stole an entire box shipment.
Right.
And they're selling it.
Because the release date is July. Now, I'm well aware that usually they always come out earlier. You know, like when I pre-ordered my Mandalorian, it came early. My Wolverine came early. So generally Hasbro gets them out earlier than the release date. So I fully expect to get my Luke in the next few weeks. But I was wondering, you know.
My favorite backup shop to shop if Hasbro Pulse is out, Big Bad Toy Store. They are probably a couple of dollars more expensive, but their shipping is very reasonable. $4 flat shipping.
Yeah.
You know, it's
Sometimes Entertainment Earth gets you a little bit on the shipping. It's like,
You on the shipping. So yeah.
Yeah.
But I got my Dark Ray. I got my Dark Ray. I'm happy. My Sith Ray from Return of the Rise of Skywalker.
The Rise of Skywalker. Cool. Yeah. I have her in pop form. Funko Pop.
Same here. I got the Funko form.
But all right, well, let's get into our featured film for our 250th episode, and there's somewhat of a pattern developing as episode 100 was Star Wars, episode 200 was Empire Strikes Back, episode 150 was Raiders of the Lost Ark, so episode 200 is Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and if we make it to 350 and 300, I wonder what people think those movies will be.
I'm looking forward to the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull one.
Yeah, I'd be way down the line. Hey, I don't knock that movie too much, you know. But
I enjoy it.
But
Shia LaBeouf.
Hey, you know what? Shia might be weird as hell now and ruined his career, but he does his job in movies. He's not a terrible actor. He does fine, you know. he's just a little nuts. We're getting some serious thunder over here. It's like shaking the house. Like, can y'all hear that through the microphone, or y'all just feel it at your own?
Well, I have it close to my house too.
We're
all fairly close together. We can.
We're all within a few square miles. You know, I know it's like there's T-Rex out there. Yeah. But Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, the 1984 sequel that created the PG-13 rating, essentially. You know, because this movie is a little bit darker than Raiders of the Lost Ark was, as it deals with the occult and. And it's a sequel prequel. It actually takes place before Raiders of the Lost Ark. And who would like to summarize Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom?
I'll do it.
Yes.
It's been a while since I've summarized the film. Okay, this year's what? Is that how many years before Raiders? 2 years?
A couple years.
1936?
36 or 37, something like that. Yeah.
So, yeah, the movie starts out with Indiana Jones delivering the ashes of the first emperor of China to some mobsters. And he gets double-crossed and gets on the plane owned by the mobsters. And see you around, Lao Che.
And a very James Bond-esque opening, yeah.
Yeah, and then Lao Che, see you around. Dr. Jones and his psych and Lao Che's henchman was laughing in the background. It's so cartoonish, so hammy.
It reminded me of James Bond too.
Yeah. Indy ends up at a Indian village not far from their escape, and the Indian village asks him to rescue their missing children and also to recover the lost Sankara stones that were also stolen from the village. And the village is very destitute and very just
run down.
Unfarmable as well. And so Indy goes on the adventure to Pencott Palace, which is where they suspect where the children are. And they also he has a sidekick named Short Round. And and for me personally, this is the first Indiana Jones I've seen ever when I was a kid. I was introduced to the character through this movie.
Nice.
But anyhow, they go to Pencott Palace, find all the children there. They were enslaved because they were looking for the missing stone that goes with a set of three stones of the Sankara. Was it five total?
Yeah, they're using the children to try to dig for it, yeah.
Yeah, so they only found three, but they're looking for the missing two. But Jones ends up saving the day by rescuing the children from the cult, the thuggy cult, in the middle of a sacrifice ritual, which included tearing someone's heart out and ignited it on fire. And peppered in with some gross scenes of the exotic dinner room scene.
Yes.
And the hall of bugs, which is disgusting still to this day.
Yes.
Yeah. And Indy ends up saving the day by releasing the slave children, bringing them back to the village, and recovering the Sankara stones from the evil cult, and bringing fertility back to the village. And that's my brief overview.
Yeah, man. Budget of $28 million. Yielded what, $330 million? About the same as Raiders.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very successful sequel. First of all, I've seen Temple of Doom, many, many times. And I noticed for this week watching it, like, that this movie, unlike Raiders, which takes place over several weeks, this movie takes place over a matter of like 2 or 3 days. It never occurred to me how quickly this movie happens over a matter of days, from the opening sequence to him ending up in India to him down in the caves fighting Mala Ram and saving the day. It's like Indy really has no time for us in this movie at all. And I remember, like you, Long, I remember seeing it as, I don't know which one I saw first, but this was always the Indy movie I remembered as a kid. And I think a lot of it is because of Short Round. He's such a great character that you identify with him if you're a young person watching it, because you're like, you want to be him joining this adventure with Indiana Jones. And, you always wonder what happened to that character. I know at one point one of the sequel scripts had him in it, but it never happened. Maybe he'll return as an older man in episode 5 once that gets made. We'll see. But in the meantime, in Temple of the Doom, and he got the part by accident. He went to the audition with his buddy, and he was explained to his buddy how to do everything. So they pulled him to the side and said, "Hey, come here. Can we speak to you a minute?" And they handed him the script, and he walked in a room and read some lines with Harrison Ford, and that's how he won the part, by accident. Wow. Yeah.
It was his brother.
Oh, yeah, his brother. Buddy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he got this iconic role by accident by trying to help his brother by getting called in the room and reading a few lines with Harrison Ford. And that's such a great story, because their chemistry on screen shows left and right, and they're so much fun. And I know for a fact, I've read that him and Harrison have stayed friends to this day, that they do talk to each other and stay friends. And I think that's a great Hollywood story, because Harrison, as much as he likes to stay private in his public life and everything, I've always heard good stories about him and how he treats people. So, and he did that with the actor who played Short Round. So that's a cool story. Kate Upshaw, I find her still a little annoying in this movie at times, but I get it. Damsel in distress. And she was even very critical of her part. She said that she felt a little too whiny and crying, but that's what Spielberg apparently wanted. He wanted her to be.
It was a comic.
Yeah, I think it was meant to be for comic relief, but it came across more like, okay, stop screaming all the time.
Yeah.
But there's some legitimately funny scenes where the snake is crawling on her leg and she's like, "I've had enough." Things elephant. I was like, "That's pretty funny," you know.
Yeah.
When she's getting and then out,
you know, she slapped him. She slapped him after being rescued. Because she was almost a heat stroke.
Yes. But this is definitely a dark Indiana Jones film. Like I said, it helped create the PG-13 rating, because sacrifice rituals and ripping hearts out and stuff, and the MPAA wasn't sure what to do. They, Raiders of the Lost Ark was a huge hit. They didn't want to give this movie an R rating. So it legitimately caused the MPAA to get together and come up with a new rating system for this film, and PG-13 was born, thanks to Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom. And I get it, because it is a bit kind of frightening. I remember watching this a while back, and I think Wyatt or somebody was in the room, and they were legitimately a little scared when Mulder M is trying to rip the heart out of Indiana Jones,
Mm-hmm. Their cave, their chest just opens up, man. Like, it just...
Yeah.
He just goes in there. But yeah, this was a... I feel like there's a lot of comic relief in this film, though. As much grotesque as it is at parts, there's a lot of comic relief, The feast scene.
Sure.
The fights,
Ah! Snake surprise!
Yeah! And then there's always, it seems like in these last two Indiana Jones films, there's always someone that is getting drawn towards a propeller somehow. You know, first it's the fan with the whip, and then, well, the second one's not a propeller, but the big dude's waistband gets caught in the roller, and then, yeah, crushed.
Yeah.
I feel like that's, like, essential. You know, he has to fight a big dude, and the big dude has to get chopped up or crushed by some machinery, you know?
And he tried to save him, too.
He did.
You know, don't forget that, yeah.
He did try and save him.
Yeah, even despite the big fight, he tried to save the guy from getting crushed.
Probably because they had all drank in the blood of Kali Ma. They underwent that forced ritual. And then the voodoo doll girl, you know?
That's a boy.
Voodoo doll boy.
Yeah, that's the Maharaja.
Yeah the Maharaja. But this film went on to win an Oscar, but I don't think they should have gotten it. I think...
What was competing that year?
Ghostbusters and special effects. Yeah. They beat out Ghostbusters. Yeah. The blue screen in daylight wasn't a good choice. I mean, you can see the blue screen going on. Ghostbusters looks much better, but the rail car scene and the stunt work is probably what kind of helped contribute to that win. But if you're just looking at the special effects, I think Ghostbusters probably should have gotten it. I mean, not by much. It's a little Ghostbusters.
Was it visual effects or special effects?
Special effects.
I guess they only had one category back then. Then they went and separated eventually.
Yeah.
Because they realized special effects were slightly different than visual effects. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because from a visual effects standpoint, I could completely see Temple of Doom winning because the rail car scene is quite impressive. The bridge scene is impressive with alligators underneath. But from a special effects standpoint, yeah, I can see how Ghostbusters could be considered, you know, impressively done. So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could have gone either way, I guess. Makes sense. No, go ahead, Long.
The suspension bridge scene is also a classic as well.
It's
cheesy because, man, it just shows how evil Malaram and sadistic he is. He's just, like, pulling people, his own followers, off the bridge to use as bombs against Jones, you know?
What's crazy? Then,
yeah, they were cutting the alligators.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what the MPAA was more concerned about than the heart ripping out. They didn't like the alligators ripping people up. That's what they – and so Spielberg did have to cut it a little bit. Yeah, they'd like that worse than the heart thing. They didn't like the alligators eating people. They wanted to rate R.
I thought it was kind of funny, and it's funny how they just filmed these Florida alligators just ripping fabric apart. And you just hear people screaming.
Right.
They're just ripping fabric apart, and you hear people screaming like they're being torn, you know.
Some Wilhelm screams in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just great. And then a little inside joke about the Han Solo scene that Indy was chasing the group of thugs up a hill, and then he goes, and then he runs off because a bigger group of thugs were going after him.
Yeah.
It the fact that he was using talking Chinese to Short Round, it's just brilliant. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It just encapsulates why Jones is such a great character.
It's fun.
He's
man.
Not perfect. He messes up. He's, you know, but, he still uses his wits to get the upper hand somehow, despite the odds.
Right.
I think this movie's underappreciated, really. And I think Crystal Skull helped it even more. But else? Some standout moments.
Well, I mean, Armish Peru, you know, who played Marlon Ram, shaved his head for the role. And he became so iconic, he stuck with the role and became one of India's most popular villainous actors for many years after this movie. Mm-hmm. So it did well for his career. They used real bugs on Kate Upshaw. In fact, that she was so frightened, they had to use sedatives to get her to be comfortable to film that scene.
Yeah. Wow.
That's kind of gross to use real bugs.
Especially if you have to step on it.
A little bit behind the scenes thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're crushing.
Yeah.
It's like, what's that on the floor? And they light the match. Oh, yeah, a bunch of disgusting bugs. Yeah, great. Just coating everything. Like
I feel like the pacing of this movie was quick, too. It didn't really drag. I felt like it didn't drag compared to Raiders. Raiders has a moment that it drags, but it was the first movie.
Yeah.
I don't feel that any of the Indiana Jones movies drag. I feel they're all pretty well paced.
But I just felt like this Temple of Doom had really good pacing throughout. You know. Yeah.
And that's probably kind of, you know, attributes to one of the points Mark made, that it takes place over just a few days, and it's just packed with stuff. Even the funny banter in the bedroom scene, I just thought that was hilarious. When what kind of are you a doctor? Like, what kind of activities would you do? And he's like, nocturnal activities.
Ancient nocturnal activities.
Yes, ancient nocturnal activities. And they're all like, he's not coming, she's not coming. And then oh, well, you got a henchman fight, which ended up injuring Indiana Jones's back, Harrison Ford's back, sorry. And he had to be out for it was a few months, right?
6 weeks or so.
Six weeks, yeah. And they had a stunt double fill in, and then when he was healthy, they shot a few shots of him, like, just kind of sitting up or picking himself back up from some of the other fights that he couldn't film. But, I always remember the temple fights and the rail car scenes. And I think this is only like the third or fourth time I've seen this film. And I didn't realize how much I liked it. I always thought I liked, Temple of Doom the most. I mean, Temple of Doom, Raiders of the Lost Ark the most, because of, you know, the ending scene and, some of the cool stuff that Indy does over there. I mean, a lot of cool stuff, the fights, trying to bluff the Nazis into handing over the, everything with a friggin' rocket launcher, and they know he's not gonna blow the girl up, so and then everyone's face melts off. I'm like, man, that's cool stuff. But here it's like you said, Long, it's paced really well, and you have a lot of comedy in there, you know, and I feel like the music's spot on, you know. It really, you know, there's maybe a
very
few
good parts, score.
Yeah, it really picks up towards the end, you know, when they're trying to get out of the temple. But this is a really good movie, and it could be the best Indiana Jones film. Could be, maybe.
I still lean towards Raiders. That's such a greatest adventure movie of all time, I think. Interesting, this movie was almost called Indiana Jones and the Temple of Death, but they felt it was a little too foreboding, so they got rid of that title. Thought that was interesting to find out. Something else I just read that I can't find. All the main characters are named after production members' dogs. Short Round was named after the screenwriter, Willard Hayek's dog. And Willie was named after Steven Spielberg's dog. And, of course, everybody knows Indiana is named after George Lucas's dog.
Yeah.
so, you know, you're all named after dogs in this movie.
I guess George Lucas, the reason he went back and tried to do a prequel as the second film was because he didn't want to make the Nazis the bad guy again.
Yeah, and I saw the movie. It's 1935, and then Raiders is 36, and Last Crusade is 38. So they all moved. All of them take place within 4 years. And Gremlins is also credited with the PG-13 rating. Both these movies came out the same year. So they had to come up with a new rating for that. You know, and it's funny just the perception of what we considered safe to watch back then. Like you said, Raiders of the Lost Ark, they're melting off faces and all this stuff. And this one, they're ripping out hearts, and it's PG-13. And now things relax even more. You get some PG-13 movies now that are pretty damn violent at times, you know. And And that's why there's been some talk about creating another rating, like a PG-15 or 16, but there's been no real movement on it. You know, but because they came up with that whole thing now where it says PG-13-4, and then they let the parents know ahead of time what's in the movie, you know, bloody situations, violence, whatever, you know. So I thought that was kind of, you know. Of course, everybody knows the club at the beginning of the movie is Club Obi-Wan, as George and Steven over the years have always had fun back and forth with each other's popular franchises. And Spielberg really didn't like this movie for a long time. He felt it was too dark. It wasn't what he was going for. And then he made Last Crusade to have a happier time, and he really enjoyed it. And then he kind of came back around on this movie when he realized that fans liked it and stuff, and he kind of came to accept it over the years. But when he initially made it and turned it into the studio, he wasn't real happy with the film. He felt it was just a little too dark and scary for what he was trying to do. You know, so he was his own critic against it. And that's kind of why he made the sequel, because at first he wasn't going to make a third one, but he felt he needed to redeem himself because he felt Temple of Doom wasn't the best it could have been, which is kind of crazy because it's still a really good movie.
Yeah. Maybe it's just at the time, you know?
Well, yeah, and sometimes directors and artists are always their own worst critics, too. You know, they don't always like things, and, you know.
You know that this film is banned in India?
Really?
Yep. Never shown on TV channels in India either.
Huh.
I think a lot of people thought it was stereotypical in the food scene and I guess the village, but it's like, you know, he was a real shaman. That shaman that.
Yes, and they hired him, and he didn't speak any English. He repeated all his lines phonetically through listening to Steven Spielberg talk to him and things like that.
Yep.
So I thought that was kind of cool. He did a good job with it. You know, he was fine.
Yeah, I believed him. Believable.
Do you have a favorite scene in this Indiana Jones movie?
Me or Matt?
I would say, man, I really like the dance scene leading up into the chase. You know, from the mob boss, who's also the same actor from Enter the Dragon. He's the guy that he's one of the Shaolin temple monks.
Right.
He's the one that asks, what is your highest technique that you strive for? And Bruce Lee says, to have no technique.
Yeah.
When my enemy expand, I contract. When I contract, he expands.
Don't you mean he said the art of fighting without fighting?
Yeah.
That was on the boat.
Yeah, that's
when he's fighting. Oh. When he's fighting the guy from Zimbabwe, or I forget, it's the white dude, and he gets him to step onto the boat. Yeah. And he gives the kid the rope. But yeah, that scene, man, it's just because it feels like he's James Bond in that moment. He gets the girl, you know, he's got a sidekick, he drinks the poison, you know, and you got to drink the antidote.
Yeah. Well, George did take some influences from Bond in creating Indiana Jones, because, you know, we all, when we talked about Raiders show, Steven Spielberg really wanted to make a Bond film, and, you know, Ian Productions was really kind of courting him to make one after the success of Jaws and Close Encounters, and George told him, like, no, I have something better. Look at this. And you know, the famous story of him and George being on the beach reading the Raiders of the Lost Ark script, and Steven said right there, okay, let's do it. And they came back after their vacation, they got Raiders of the Lost Ark made. You know? Mm-hmm. So definitely some Bond influence in it.
Oh, yeah.
What about you, Long?
For me, the entire sequence when they're trying to rescue the children from the dolly close-up of
Indies.
Yeah, well, the close-up of Indiana Jones freed of the hypnotized curse to him rescuing the children, and then the whole minecart scene. Really, that final, you know, second half is my favorite. The whole fight sequence as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I enjoy the minecart scene too. I think it's an amazing sequence. I mean, it's, you know, it's definitely a thrilling adventure. Just impressively done with the special effects they had at the time. And it works so well on screen. It comes off really cool. And then the whole last 20-25 minutes of this movie are just so action packed. I mean, that's what Indiana Jones though is. It's adventure, and it's, you know, as much as him and Indiana Jones, James Bond are probably the two most famous and maybe best adventures, you know, characters of all time. And so, you know, sometimes I lean towards Indiana more than I do Bond. I mean, I'm a big Bond fan, but I always think back like, man, there could have been so much more in Indiana Jones. I always felt that Paramount could have taken this character and did like they did with Bond, and they could have recast him and made more Indiana Jones films. And I would have been all for that, you know, but it seemed to be, you know, George and Harrison's baby over the years, and they refused to recast, and they made the Crystal Skull sequel with Harrison Ford still at an elder age. And I don't hate that movie. It is what it is, but I always just felt like Indiana could have been so much more, but yet we have gotten so far four movies. We had a young Indiana Jones television series, which is actually really good. That series is very underappreciated. I'm hoping maybe one day it was on Netflix for the longest time, then disappeared, and maybe it'll show up on Paramount Plus, because young Indiana Jones is pretty well done. You know, it won a lot of Emmys and it was well received when it came out. And then, and now we might be getting a fifth movie, you know, in 2022. Is it next year or the year after they're going to make it? I don't know. With James Mangold directing, so mm-hmm. and Spielberg producing. So maybe one last hurrah for Indiana Jones. Just don't kill him on screen, James Mangold. You know,
yeah.
Mangold has a thing about killing characters on screen. Let's not do that.
Yeah, please don't.
I would be upset. But how do you guys rank Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom?
Yeah, I give it an A.
It's an A, just man. For,
yeah. Just the pacing. I don't care. The story is dark, but. But it comes out great at the end.
Yep. I think it's a triple A then for sure. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. It's got its comedy moments. It might not be quite as fun as Last Crusade is, and it might not be quite as action. I mean, I don't know. I feel Raiders is really action packed. I know you guys said it felt like a drag, but I think Raiders has more action throughout the film, where this movie has more action towards the end of the film. Maybe that's just me, but I give it an A also, man. I love the Indiana Jones original trilogy, and I've come to accept Crystal Skull as the stepchild that you kind of like. actually Crystal Skull, if you take away the swinging with the monkey scene, I'm fine with the rest of the movie, you know, more of that. And I'm sorry, but I can't think of the actress's name that played Marion Ravenwood. You could tell she hadn't done much acting in several years because she's Carrie Allen. Yeah, she's flat as a brick in Crystal Skull. It just feels like she's reading her lines the entire time. Like, she's really good in Raiders, but in Crystal Skull, she's just not very good.
Well, I don't blame her. I mean, I don't think she's comfortable acting in front of all the blue screen, too.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Possibly. But she's just not real good in that movie. And that's probably the two biggest hiccups of Crystal Skull.
Yeah. Which I'm looking forward to in a way which kind of relates is, like, I want to see how the new Obi-Wan series is with Ewan McGregor reprising his role and see how much of a difference it makes on his acting. You know?
Mm-hmm. So. That makes sense. But yeah, definitely overall an A for Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom. A good, fun movie, and worthy of our 250th episode. So for our top five this week, we normally sometimes our top fives relate to the film we did, but instead, since we're doing 7 years of Rebel Radio and our 250th episode, we thought we'd look back on our favorite episodes we've done. And I'll go first this week, I guess, since I went last week. And I do have a quick honorable mentions, and this is going way back. When you were doing your own show, The Warp Cave, we did a crossover, getting ready for The Force Awakens hitting theaters. And that was episodes 34, 35, 36, and 37. It was a 4-week crossover where we played off of each other. And I felt like those were those episodes were the episodes where I'm like, okay, I kind of like this podcasting thing, you know? And we supported each other, and that was a lot of fun to do, those Road to the Force Awakens episode. Those are my honorable mentions. But at number five, I have episode 153, and that was the Iron Giant episode, where my son Michael joined us for the episode. And maybe it's not our best, But I just felt like it was just a lot of fun to do. Michael really enjoyed it. He's been asking me if he can ever come on another episode. And I said, we'll see if one fits in for you. And I think I like it because it created such a good memory of having him on the show and doing one of my favorite cartoon movies of all time. I love The Iron Giant.
Nice. I've got episode 134, The Naked Gun. I just thought, you know, it was a movie that Long really wanted to do, and I hadn't seen it since I watched it with my dad, and I kind of halfway paid attention. And then when he picked it, I had to watch it again, and I was like, man, this is hilarious. You know, it just seeing all the cop movies that were spoofed in it was great. And, I thought I had a lot of fun on that episode. So, yeah, Naked Gun.
Cool. My number five is every episode that has me in it. That was kind of a cheap space. Okay, moving on. Number four. Number four. Go ahead, Mark.
My number four is episode 71. And this is before we rebooted the show. In fact, it's the only episode I have on here pre-reboot. And that was our live at Comp Palooza episode that year that we did with members of the 501st. We had Brian on and Nikki and Josh. And I know Nikki and Josh used to be married, and they're now separated and all that. But it was just a fun episode. And the show that was supposed to come on behind us, if you remember, Matt didn't show up, so we got extra time. So we went live for almost an hour and 20 minutes, and we literally – even Frank, man, did a good job on that episode. We were in a box. We were just all in a zone, the five of us. Six of us with Brian. Just talking what we love, and that's fucking Star Wars, man. And it was cool to hear how the 501st works and hear Josh and Nikki's perspective of putting on these costumes and Brian's perspective and going and making little kids happy. And it's one of the best live shows we did. It was just a good episode. And it was a lot of fun to do.
For me, I've got episode 99, Die Hard. I just thought it was awesome because, you know, we're talking about, you know, what could have been with the film. Of course, the inevitable question, is it a Christmas movie? And I think we had a lot of fun banter with that one.
See, sometimes I feel like we rebooted with episode 81, right? Sometimes I feel like those first 20 movies we did felt like the first 20 episodes of the actual show where we were trying to figure out our footing. You know, some of them were pretty good. Some of them was like, But Die Hard was one of the better ones.
Like, I feel like 7, it probably sums that one up. I really want to redo 7. I think it could use a reboot. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah. My number four is actually Matt's pick, the Roadhouse episode.
Oh, yeah.
Not necessarily for the movie itself, but the banter we were doing with the Roadhouse.
Oh, that was Matt's funny.
I still can't believe you ripped that guy's throat out, man. I still can't believe that happened. He just rips this dude's throat out.
You ever seen that movie before? Or
Mark, I had seen it, but I didn't retain it. So I didn't remember him ripping a guy's throat out of nowhere towards the end of the movie. So it's just like, Yeah.
It was one of the most, the movie had so many random moments in there, and it was going one way, and then it took almost a 180 turn halfway through the movie. And the villain's motivation became very sadistic, but I don't know. Just listening to our reaction to the whole movie was pretty enjoyable.
That was fun. That was fun.
Matt was quite the trooper, considering we were kind of making fun of him for making us watch it. So, hey, that's my number four.
Any fun, even at my expense, is still fun.
Yeah.
At number three, I have episode 209. That was John Woo's The Killer. That was the birthday pick I did last year, and I think I was really excited because you guys were so receptive to it. Y'all brought Charles A game talking about one of my favorite action movies of all time, and I know we did Hardboiled without Long, but sometimes I always look back on that and like to know Long's perspective of Hardboiled, because I know he's a big fan of that. But I love John Woo. In fact, that company that does the Hong Kong Rescue bootlegs, Long, he just put out his version of the Killer, which I have on order. So I'm waiting for that to come in. Hopefully he remastered it as well as he did Hardboiled, and I'm looking forward to watching it in a remastered version. That's my number three.
My number three is episode 155, Ghostbusters, talking about the great Jim Belushi, and Aykroyd's vision for this film that just became a cult classic, and for a long time one of the highest grossing comedies in a long time. And I think we had a lot of fun talking about the film and the toys, and your kids, Mark, getting into it, what the legacy is of it, and this legacy sequel coming up. So I remember having a lot of fun talking during that film. And yeah, episode 155, Ghostbusters.
My number three is Judge Dredd.
Oh, nice.
The Judge Dredd episode is actually pretty fun. It's actually the first half of it was really good. The movie feature was well done too, as far as our thoughts on it. But I liked it because it was Matt dropping the bombshell, not really a bombshell, but the great news that he was having a new addition to his family.
Yep.
And I was kind of making fun, not making fun. Well, I was making fun of it.
Well, what are we not making fun of, Matt? Let's be honest here.
Yep.
But yeah, it was just me mostly picking on Matt for his potent genetic bullets.
And making the whine, the crying sounds.
Yeah. Yeah. Throughout the episode.
Yeah.
I'm surprised Mark didn't say much when I was picking on Matt, but yeah. Anyhow, Judge Dredd episode's one of my favorites.
At number two, I have episode 100, and that was Star Wars, of course. A movie that is a reason I'm into the things I'm in, and Long came on that episode as a guest before he was a regular. We had Brian on that episode as well. Frank was still around doing the show at the time, so we had a nice roundtable discussion about Star Wars and why we love it. And we were all sitting here in my living room talking that movie and celebrating our 100th episode. And I don't remember everything about it. I have to go back and listen to it, but I just remember just having a good time with all you guys talking that episode. We took some pictures, I think, afterwards with lightsabers and stuff. For some reason, Brian's not in any of those pictures. I think he took off before we had a chance to take them. Because was he on that episode, or maybe he wasn't? I would have sworn he was. Maybe it was just Long and Frank. But yeah, episode 100, Star Wars.
Episode two, or say episode two. My number two is the Last Action Hero episode, for the same reason that Long picked Roadhouse. I think it's hilarious, but when I pick these cult classic films.
But I somewhat enjoyed watching Roadhouse. I didn't enjoy watching Last Action Hero.
I think it's hilarious whenever I basically pick this movie that's easy to dog, and then we just have a lot of fun just talking about it. I mean, the ridiculous stuff that's in the movie, like the Hamlet, the fake Hamlet trailer, and he's like, "Stay thy hand, fair prince. Who says I'm fair?" And he pulls out a machine gun instead of a sword, and he's just shooting people, and then the castle just explodes. Yeah, I mean, that film shouldn't have been. I still maintain the film should have been better with the writer of Die Hard, the director of Lethal Weapon, and the Terminator. It's himself, you know. Still don't know how we got Alice in Wonderland or Wizard of Oz out of that, you know, a Wizard of Oz movie, basically.
Yeah. My number two is the, I guess, another birthday episode of mine is Jaws. I just enjoyed hearing both of your reactions to it. Pretty nice discussion. It's like one of the movies that, not movies, but one of the episodes where we were just discussing all the behind the scenes and hearing Matt's reaction to it, because he kind of has a more fresher point of view on things. And it's just one of my favorite movie discussions of recent memory, for sure. And then, of course, the bonus moment where I broke out in the song singing one of the sea shanties.
I was hoping you would say that, because I was like, that's what I remember from that episode.
Yeah.
I was like, holy crap, Long is breaking out, singing old Taylor tunes.
Right. These shanties. So, anyhow, that's my number two pick.
And number one, and it's probably too cliche for me, but about a year ago, we sat here online and we had my our friend Carrie on the show for episode 200 for The Empire Strikes Back, and it wasn't so much doing Empire Strikes Back, which was one of my favorite movies ever, but it's just having Carrie on the show finally, because I mean, he's a big reason why I still podcast, and he encouraged me so much and helped me out, and to finally get him to come on a show with us was a big moment, you know, for me to have him on the show. And it was a fun episode to do, talking Empire. He brought the trivia to it, and it added a different element. And the show kind of ended up a little messy in a good way, you know, if that makes sense, since he added some extra elements to it. But it went well to celebrate 200 episodes about a year ago with episode 200.
I picked the same episode, man. I felt like that was really fun. Carrie, like you said, Carrie surprised us with trivia, and I think we all had fun trying to answer trivia, and it was just a wholesome episode. You know, we had all these extras, and I think we all had fun, and yeah, man, it was definitely, I feel like, one of our strongest.
Yeah. Well, my number one is actually one of our longest episodes, and it is the Avengers Endgame episode. That's my personal favorite. That was probably the most dissected movie we've ever done. Compared to all of the movies that we've done, we broke down all of our favorite moments. We broke down all of our least favorite moments, and we went through each moment by character. You know, and then we also, every time Matt went into some weird random non sequitur, I always had to say nerd. So yeah, that's one of my favorite episodes, my all time favorite episode to do. So the Endgame episode for Rebel Radio.
Yeah.
Check it out, guys. It's one of the...
My favorite episode is any episode with you guys.
Aww.
But,
there we
but
go.
Yeah, no, we've had some good episodes. I mean, we've had Rob on for what he did. He did Saving Private Ryan with us, and Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. And that Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, he had us rolling, laughing with some stuff. You know, Matt Ramirez came on and did The Raid with us, which was a lot of fun. Jason Elliott came on for a couple episodes.
Brandon,
you know, Clint Brandon came on for an episode, and Rob Zip. And, you know, I just don't want to leave out any guests that have helped us get to this 250th point. Of course, Daniel over at Misfit Toys has been on a couple of shows and been a big supporter of ours, letting us do live shows at his shop, and hopefully another one coming soon. The live shows we did at Comic Palooza, which those aren't always my favorite, even though the 501 first one, I like the smaller live show a little bit better, like we do it at Misfit Toys. You know, those big live shows are a little bit too many technical problems, you know. but just, you know, I just don't want to leave any guests out we've had on the show. Of course, Lindsay, who used to have her podcast, you know, she's been on a couple episodes, and her husband Sam was on one. I'm probably leaving some people out, because we've had a lot of people on the show over the years, and you know, and I'm sure we'll have more. Justin and George, a long time ago, to promote their comic, came on an episode, and I'm sure we'll have more as the time goes on. You know, guests are good to have, and COVID in the last year has made us not have as many guests, I guess, doing it digitally, even though it's capable of doing it. We've just done our thing, but I'm sure we'll have more. But you know, we made it this far. You know, we're going to shoot for 10 years. Might be a little bit older, a little bit grayer, a little bit balder. But maybe we'll make it 10 years and get to 500 episodes. That would be something.
Definitely.
But let's do some news. Big news this week is Amazon Studios acquired MGM Studios. And it had been rumored for a while now that MGM was up for sale. And at one point, I think, you know, Warner Brothers talked about buying them. Of course, Warner Brothers just merged with the Discovery Networks. But now Amazon has bought MGM in their catalog. And, you know, they're already talking about within a month or two, they're going to have a lot of these classic movies up on Amazon Prime and lots more stuff for people to watch. They get the James Bond franchise. It's now going to be owned by Amazon. So it's a pretty big deal. And of course, I was joking. I'm not really joking. I'm hoping that it leads to a Buckaroo Banzai revival now that Amazon owns the rights to it. I mean, a few years ago, Amazon wanted to make a Buckaroo TV series with Kevin Smith, and then they found out, wait a minute, we don't have the rights. We can't do it. And MGM wouldn't sell them. But guess what? You own them now, motherfuckers. So maybe my reboot, my dreams for a reboot will finally happen. But it's crazy, man. It's like, what do you have left now? You have Warner Brothers, Disney, Universal, and Sony. That's it, man. You basically have four major movie studios now. So yeah, MGM is, you know, Warner Brothers bought a lot of them. Disney bought a lot. And now MGM is owned by Amazon. So it's crazy. Well, I guess Amazon's its own movie studio now. So I guess maybe five major studios. Yeah, so it's crazy. So we'll see what happens with that. Did you guys check out that Eternals trailer?
I did.
Yeah.
Man, it had quite an epic feel to it. I'm curious about it. I'm a huge comic book nerd, like, you know, you guys too. And I'm not real familiar with these characters, though. I know they have something to do with the Celestials, and there's a reason why they've sat everything out for the last 10 years, which I'm sure will be explained. I like the look of the film. It looks interesting.
Yeah. Of course, everyone's always wondering, okay, it's like, okay, these Eternals have been around. Where were they when Thanos attacked, you know? And then I showed you that screenshot of a online discussion, and Matt had a kick out of it when he read the Reddit comments.
Oh, that
it.
Was funny.
Yeah. What was it? I don't know. The jury's still out. It didn't have me as excited as Guardians of the Galaxy. But we'll see.
I like the memes coming out.
I like the scope of the trailer. The scope of the trailer made it feel like this is going to be really important, you know? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, Aaron Taylor Johnson, who of course played Quicksilver, has been cast in Sony's Kraven the Hunter movie. My first thought was, I had two thoughts on this. He's not who I would ever see playing Kraven. Two, why do we need a Kraven the Hunter movie? You know, it's just like, why do we need a Morbius movie? It's just like
scraping the bottom of the barrel.
There's one villain that license. Okay, maybe two villains in all the Marvel universe that are popular enough for their own movie, and I would beg to say that's Venom and Magneto. I can't think of any other villain that's interesting enough that I want to see a movie about him. You know, so I don't know. I heard that. It had been a while. I thought that whole idea had died off. I thought Sony had given up on a Kraven movie. But
Kingpin?
And I don't even think Kingpin's big enough for his own movie. And not only that, Jeffrey Dean Morgan wants to play Kraven. I would have hired him.
Yes.
He's been begging to play it. And he, I think, would be great.
He looks like him, at least.
Yeah, I don't see Aaron Taylor Johnson as Kraven. You know, Jeffrey Dean Morgan's over there raising his hand, saying, I'll do it. So, I don't know. So, we'll see.
When I first saw Jeffrey Dean Morgan, I thought he kind of looked like Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, I can see that a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have y'all ever seen that movie based on the DC Comics that he did, The Losers? Have y'all seen that?
Yes.
It's actually not a bad movie. I mean, it's generic. But it's a good movie. Evil Dead is going to finally get a sequel. For HBO Max called Evil Dead Rise. But no Ash, as Bruce Campbell is retired from the character, but him and Sam Raimi are going to produce it. And a guy named Lee Cornyn is directing it. I don't know. This news kind of came this week, but people didn't seem that excited about it. And I think it's because there's no Bruce Campbell and Sam Raimi. It's just like, without those guys in a true Evil Dead sequel, it's like, why? I mean, that's kind of how I felt about it. Like, eh.
Yeah,
no Bruce Campbell. Not interested.
That belongs to them. They slept in gymnasiums and friends' houses. And
yeah. And I'm not even a huge fan of the series. Like, I appreciate the original for what it did on a low budget. I don't like the sequel at all because it's basically just a remake. I think it's pointless. But I do enjoy Army of Darkness. You know, it's a fun movie. But like you said, Matt, that's their franchise. A sequel without Ash in it, eh, I don't care. You know?
Exactly.
And then lastly, Netflix teased us with Cobra Kai Season 4 this week, releasing a very short teaser and a poster. It looks like Terry Silver from The Karate Kid Part 3 is going to finally make his appearance in the show. Which I think if you look at the narrative of Cobra Kai, it makes sense. You know, all these characters in the films are coming back. And I'm still sticking with my theory that Miss Little Hot Stuff is his daughter. I'm sticking with that theory. You know?
Makes sense.
Yeah. I can't think of her name. That's why I call her Miss Little Hot Stuff. I'm sorry I sound a little bit chauvinistic saying that, but that's just what I'm thinking. Later this year, apparently. Netflix just dropped a little teaser, but I don't think it's it until the fall or even the Christmas time. So, I mean, we just got Season 3 in January, so I imagine it'll be a little later this year.
Yeah.
So, I think that's kind of cool, though. That show should not work on so many levels, but somehow it does. You know, it's just, it's an unwatchable, watchable mess, if that makes sense.
Finds a way.
Yes. Did you guys ever finish Season 3?
Yeah.
No.
I knew Matt did. Man, long your slack, bro.
Or Eagle Fang. Eagles don't have fangs. Right.
Well, before we get out of here and move on to our next 250 episodes, let's preview next week's film. After a series of kind of family films, we're going to do a very R-rated comic book movie next week. This has actually been I've had a few people ask me how come we haven't done this movie yet, so I guess we're finally getting around to it. And there's Robert Rodriguez's comic book film that he took straight from the pages of Frank Miller's comic and literally put on screen in a pretty remarkable fashion, if you ask me. And that is Sin City.
Do a thing to me, Hardigan.
There'll be a risk. There'll be death. Nothing can stop this.
Time to prove to your friends that you're worth a damn.
We'll fight the cops and the mob. We'll go to war.
This isn't some barroom, bro.
This is the bad days, the all or nothing days. They're back.
You already made a big mistake yourself.
A hardtop with a decent engine, and make sure it's got a big trunk.
Yeah, this would be fun to watch. Get to see Jessica Alba dance around and do her thing. And see some good old Bruce Willis violence, you know. Since he's a good movie, I'm not sure which version you guys have. I think the Blu-ray I have has the uncut version and the different versions where you can watch it, you know, out of order and all that, or in order, or whatever it is. So, you know, but anyway, you watch it, doesn't matter. It should be a fun one to watch next week. Cause I legitimately liked that movie, you know, and I like the sequel too. I know the sequel didn't get as much love, but I like the sequel also. And, so it'd be a fun one to watch. And, you guys have seen Sin City. I know that.
Yes.
Yeah.
This will not be a first time watch for anybody. But as we move on, we got some fun stuff coming up, you know, some good shows coming up. I'm going to have my birthday pick soon. We're going to cover some good movies. We'll work in Long's stop requesting Interspace to me every day on text messages sometime in the next couple months.
Well, respond, dude.
What? I never said no, technically. I just said, okay.
Well, I don't even know if he liked the movie in the first place.
It's been a long time since I've seen it. I vaguely remember it. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
And, I'll watch it. We'll get it in there. You know, so. But yeah, you know, 250 episodes. We plot ourselves in the back. 7 years of doing the show, and we're going to keep on trekking as long as we can because we enjoy doing it. And again, thank you guys for listening. Go to the Rebel Radio Podcast.com for everything you need. Make sure you're following us on Facebook. And I'm a bit a little lazy with the Twitter and Instagram, but I'll try to be somewhat unlazy with that, and so that you guys get everything you need on social media. But until next week, this again, thank you for supporting us and letting us get to 250 episodes.
Yes.
And until next week, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
This is Long, the archaeologist.
And as always, for hopefully several, many, many more episodes, remember, just go there and do it.
Hey, you're listening to Rebel Radio Podcast, and this is Jay Muse, Snooch to the Nooch. Go there and do it.
This is Chuck Huber. You're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast. Stop being so awesome.